You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, this is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network. This week, two bombs exploded near the finish line of the Boston Marathon. Three people were killed and nearly 200 were injured. Runners, spectators, and first responders, Bostonians and visitors alike, came to the aid of the injured, carried people to safety, tore off their shirts to make tourniquets, and even finished the marathon and then kept running to get to the hospital to give blood. If there's a model for how to behave when bombs go off, the people of Boston showed us what it is. It's Earth Day, April 22nd, 2013. How do you behave when the polar ice is melting? The storm of the century happens every 2 years, and global climate change threatens our very existence. We're going to take a cue from Washington Republicans and totally ignore the environment, because we've got God Girl, Kathleen Falsani, on the show today, and I want to talk about how to behave when you're the Pope. I'm your host, Brian Kaiser, and this is How to Behave, the Pope Show. So, every week we deal head-on with the most vexing etiquette and behavior questions that we all face in 21st century America. In other words, we hope that other people can learn from my bad example. Behavior analysis team for the week is in the house. Lean, mean, fighting machine, Hannah Howard.
Hey, Brian.
How you doing?
Doing well.
Good. And new to the show this week, beer aficionado, musician, and the composer of the brand new How to Behave theme music, John Lundbaum.
Hey, Brian. Hey, Hannah.
Hey.
So let's start with the music. I'm really happy with it, John.
How fantastic. You feel? I'm happy with it as well. It was kind of thrilling to hear it coming through the cans there.
Yeah, good.
I couldn't resist bopping my head.
Your head was bopping.
My head was definitely bopping, enthusiastically.
So that's your band, Big Five Chord?
Yeah, my band, Big Five Chord. John Lundbaum and Big Five Chord. We did a live recording session out at Brooklyn Fireproof, just a few blocks from here. Last week, and took some time to lay down the new theme song, so it's very exciting.
Excellent. Now, I asked you to do the music because I'm a fan of Brian and the Haggards.
Right.
Can you explain that?
Absolutely. Brian and the Haggards is the same group of people, the same five guys. The short version of the story is maybe 10 years ago or so, I was exposed to the music of Merle Haggard for the first time, kind of late in life, and instantly fell in love and turned it over to my friend Brian, who had grown up in Nitro, West Virginia, but was a jazz tenor sax player and played in my band. And he also fell in love and started transcribing Merle Haggard tunes and started asking if he could play them on Big Five Chord gigs. And then eventually we started booking Big Five Chord gigs where he only played Merle Haggard songs, and then we rebranded that thing as Brian and the Haggards. We've put out two albums so far. We have another album in the can that we did in collaboration with a really famous musician from that now lives in the Carolinas named Eugene Chadbourne. Hopefully coming out this fall. That's Brian and the Haggards, which you were turned on to. So same guys, but you know, this isn't a Merle Haggard song, so technically it's Big Five Chord.
Technically it's Big Five Chord, but I was inspired by Brian and the Haggards, so I wanted to give a shout out to that part of what you do.
Yeah, and thanks for asking us to contribute. It was our pleasure.
All right, so the phone lines are open today. If you're listening to the live stream at heritageradionetwork.org and want to join the conversation, call us at 718-497-2128. This is our fourth episode. No one has called in yet, so even if you don't have a question or comment, give us a call and have the honor of being the first caller on How to Behave. Hannah, have you told all your friends to listen and call like I asked you to?
I did, but my friends are notoriously lazy. Lazy friends, surprise me.
I just attempted to post to Facebook, but I don't have reception back here on my crappy phone.
Yeah, we are also available as a download and a podcast, so I think most people are listening to us at their leisure.
Perfect.
So today we're talking about the Pope. Did you guys watch the Pope selection process a month ago?
I didn't stay glued to the smoke cam, but I did follow it somewhat closely.
Yeah. I am not a Catholic, and I have no reason to be interested, but I do find the whole the pomp around the choosing of the Pope really to be fun and intriguing, and even in the ways that horrify me about Catholicism, which I guess we'll get into. So today on the phone with us, we have Kathleen Falsani. She's currently the religion writer for the Orange County Register. She's also the author of the books The God Factor, Inside the Spiritual Lives of Public People, Sin Boldly, A Field Guide for Grace, and most importantly, The Dude Abides, The Gospel According to the Coen Brothers. Welcome, Kathleen.
Hey, so happy to be with you.
Well, thanks for joining us. So let's get to talking about the Pope. I know
sure.
A lot of people around the world, Catholics and non-Catholics, are fascinated by the selection of the new Pope. And I know I particularly was impressed when the new guy, Francis, started behaving differently than his predecessors. Can you talk a little bit about how his behavior was?
He has. Yeah, I was there in Rome. I was standing watching I was glued to the Jumbotron smoke cam in the rain, waiting for the new guy to appear. And he walked out, and none of us knew who he was, which is always fun. And he's been teaching us about who he is pretty much in real time ever since. You know, we obviously, somebody found a link to Google that was actually working in the square and announced that he was from Argentina and not Italy, as we had first suspected and worried he might be, which would have been more of the same.
Who were you with? Were you with a bunch of other journalists?
With a bunch of other journalists around me, doing what we do.
And you're religion writers, and you literally hadn't heard of the guy. You didn't know who he was.
No. I mean, he walked out, and we're all like, who? We heard his name, and we thought, oh, no, an old Italian. That's just not what the church needs right now. But happily, he was not an old Italian. He's been, like I said, sort of teaching us about how he's going to be Pope in real time every day. And one of the first things he did, there are all these wonderful stories about him that pretty much come out on a daily basis now, of him doing something completely unexpected for a pontiff. But the first thing he did was the popes, you know, they're in the conclave, they elected him, they tried to get him to dress up in all the fancy robes, he wouldn't do it, went out, met everybody, of course, didn't greet the world the way he was supposed to, according to script in Latin and all, you know, the way it's been done for millennia. Instead, he said, buonasera, he said, good evening. You know, and of course the crowd went nuts, because here's this guy who's not supposed to say that, and he does.
What was he supposed to say?
I couldn't even tell you. I think I might have known 8 years ago the last time I was standing there, but it wasn't buonasera.
Some big dramatic Latin thing?
Yeah, yeah, some formal Latin, greeting. And for instance, he asked the crowd to pray for him before he prayed for them, which hasn't been done before. Very humble. And then the stories, of course, the next day start to come out from other cardinals Cardinal Dolan in New York City, in fact, told this one story about how he was standing there at the the dormitory where they stayed during the conclave, and there was a minibus running back and forth from St. Peter's to the short distance to the Casa Santa Marta, where they stay. And the last shuttle of the evening pulled up, and who got off? The Pope. He just rode the shuttle back with all the other guys.
And that's...
We thought that was marvelous. And then the next morning wanted to go to one of the cathedrals in Rome that's dedicated to the Virgin Mary to pray. And on the way back, insisted that they stop at the hotel where they'd been staying so he could pay his room bill himself.
Does the Pope carry around credit cards?
Anecdotes and sort of nods. But, boy, they seem to hold profound meaning and really gave us an early indication of this guy is not like the others, and he continues to do that.
And so what is the profound meaning of all those acts of humility?
He was, in a very practical, moment-to-moment way, eschewing the pomp and circumstance and more importantly, privilege of the papacy. Like, no, that's not what this is about. I'm first and foremost a servant, and I'm just like everyone else, and I need to lead by example. That's what he said when they said, why did you go and pay your own bill? He said, I want to set an example for other priests and bishops and for Catholics that, you know, you take care of your own debts.
Yeah.
And he just, like, for instance, he didn't wear all the fancy robes when he came out, and reportedly when they were trying to get him to put on the kind of robes that his predecessor was so fond of, he said that the carnival is over.
Really?
You know, and he's from Argentina, so he's like, Carnivale is over. I'm not wearing that stuff. That's not me. You know, he still wears the same iron pectoral cross that he's had since he became a bishop. Very simple man, and took a vow of poverty as a young person, and has lived a life that is dedicated to that. It really has.
So let's talk a little bit about how that is such a contrast. Like the pomp and circumstance around the papacy is extreme when, yep, at the same time, priests, and I assume that goes all the way to the Pope, take a vow of poverty, right?
Well, not all priests do,
no?
But he's a religious order priest. You know, for instance, diocesan priests, just like most of the people that you see in churches around the country, in New York City, you know, your average parish priest is probably a diocesan priest, and they, in fact, don't take vows of poverty. They just take vows of chastity and obedience. But he's a Jesuit, and they do take a vow of poverty. And we haven't had, I'm trying to think if we've had a, no, I don't think we've had a religious order priest before. We certainly haven't had a Jesuit. And he just is very mindful, it would seem, of the fact that, you know, Catholic social teaching says there's a preferential option for the poor, and that, you know, part of what we're supposed to do as the hands and feet of Christ in the world is to serve the poor, and you can't do that if you're living like a king. And so even though the pomp and circumstance, some of that in terms of the liturgy and the tradition of how you install a pope, for instance, some of that is about the position and not the man. And so, you know, they pull out all the stops, the bands and, you know, all the hoopla. But I remember speaking to one priest, it was a Franciscan, the day of Pope Francis's inauguration. So this guy standing there and, you know, the brown plain cassock, you know, very simple man, happened to be an American, and he basically said, I think the cardinals are overdressed, because the Pope himself wore just his plain white cassock, and then only briefly wore his sort of ceremonial garb that was still very plain for a Pope.
Wow.
You didn't see all this luscious brocade, and then he took it off as soon as he could.
If I could ask a quick follow-up,
sure,
question about something you said earlier. You mentioned not living like a king, but living like a man.
Yeah.
I'm sort of...
Like a servant.
Yeah, like a servant. Exactly. Like a servant to Christ. I'm sort of... for me, I'm not being a Catholic and not following this, you know, socially, not terribly closely. For me, it's sort of hard to tell how much of it is optics as far as the behavior goes, and how much of it is actual sort of meaningful reform. I mean, we have a man who, by all accounts, is extremely conservative and doctrinally is going to continue some of the, if not all of the sort of controversial, not controversial, but very conservative stances of the past two popes. And while clearly the life choices he makes for himself are different, how much can we expect for that to sort of echo through the doctrines of the Catholic Church?
Well, doctrine in the Catholic Church doesn't change. So you don't expect a pope to be a doctrinal reformer. That's not what anyone would expect him to do. But, you know, I know that we say he's conservative. I suppose in the grander scheme of things, globally, yeah, he's conservative. But I think
conservative for me, not necessarily for the Catholic
Church.
Yeah.
But he's not, you know, you wouldn't call him liberal by any means in a Catholic context. But he seems to be someone who has lived a life that is far more experienced and practical than some of his predecessors, maybe. And he, you know, he was born to immigrant parents, grew up in a, you know, poor working class section. That's where he's lived his whole life. Even when he became a bishop and an archbishop, he still lived very simply, still had contact with regular people and therefore their regular lives and their regular struggles, and I think that informs how he's going to do his ministry as Pope, which in turn informs how not just Catholics, but a lot of people who would call themselves followers of Christ in one fashion or another view themselves in the world. And yes, these first, you know, few weeks and days and months of his pontificate have been filled with these gestures, small, that had a lot of meaning to them in a symbolic way. We really won't know what kind of changes he's going to make if he does, for quite some time. But we're starting to hear things that, to my ear at least, as somebody, you know, I'm not Catholic, but I'm a Vatican watcher by trade, I suppose, in some fashion. There's a change in the wind, and it's not just because he's a man who's committed to the poor and wants a church that's there for the poor. Well, I think one of the things I heard this morning was that he's talking about appointing women to some significant positions inside the Vatican. This is a man who loves women, and I don't mean that in a randy kind of way, but But he loves women. He appreciates women. He's used to working with women. The president in Argentina, even though they had a fairly combative relationship, he's used to working with a woman as an equal, as somebody that has to be a co-collaborator. And that is a big change
at
the Vatican.
That's an interesting topic, and I actually want to talk more about this Pope's relationship to the women, both of the church and of the world at large. But we're going to take a short break. So when we come back, Francis has changed the way the Pope behaves in public, but let's see what it means for the future of the church. This is How to Behave on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
You said we were through. I asked all my friends. They said it was true that you were in love with somebody new.
You're listening to All Them Things by the California Honey Drops on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I never did for you, so I went to your house. I knocked on your door. I snuck round the back, 'cause I knew you were home. I peeked in to see, I could already hear you doing all them things that you never did for me.
The following is a message from the Heritage Meat Shop.
Are you tired of just hearing buzzwords? Do you want to actually take part in the food revolution? Then come on down to the Heritage Meat Shop, located in New York's historic Essex Street Market, on the corner of Essex and Delancey. We have rare breed pork, beef, poultry, lamb, and goat, not to mention charcuterie that'll make you squeal. All raised right, by the right people, so you know they'll taste right. Try the meat that over 100 New York chefs ache for. Come to the Heritage Meat Shop and pick up some revolution today.
For more information, visit heritagemeatshop.com. Did you know HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a member-supported nonprofit organization? If you like what you're listening to, go to our website and click that donate button. Become a member and get special discounts, invites, VIP treatment, t-shirts, and more. Support us in our mission to bring you the freshest food content in the nation.
Welcome back to How to Behave. I'm in the studio with Hannah Howard and John Lundbaum. Our guest is God Girl Kathleen Falsani. So, Kathleen, you're pretty much the coolest religion writer in the country, right?
I don't know about that.
As evidenced by the fact that you are called God Girl, and it is spelled G-R-R-R-L-L-L, I believe, right?
G-R-R-L. It's just my email address because somebody else already had the one with the I.
Really?
But yeah. She gets a lot of really interesting emails, I would imagine, whoever she is.
That's meant for you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not in touch with her? Like, hey.
No, I don't know who she
please
is.
Please forward my emails to me.
Yeah, right? They eventually make their way to me.
Okay. So during the break, we were talking about the Pope's relationship to women.
Yes.
And a couple of things. Well, one thing in Pope Francis's behavior that came up right after he became the Pope was that he, was it Easter Sunday when he washed the feet of some women?
Yeah, it was a Maundy Thursday, so it was a Thursday before Good Friday, so the Thursday just before Easter, and, you know, that's that particular ritual is something that a lot of Christian churches do, but particularly in Rome with the Pope, there's a way that it's been done. You know, you go to the Basilica of St. John Lateran, and you have 12 very carefully selected priests who, in all their regalia, are up on the altar, and there's a, you know, a silver pitcher, and it's all very kind of neat, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. But he didn't do that. He said, no, I'd like to go to this juvenile detention center. And so that's where he went. And then scandalizing a lot of the Roman Vatican folks, invited two women to participate, and he washed their feet, and one of them was a young Muslim woman. And that had never been done before. A pope has never publicly, at least, washed a woman's feet before as part of this ritual. And that was, you know, deeply meaningful for a lot of people.
Now, call me crazy, but that sounds to me like something that Jesus would have done.
Right? I would agree with you. But, of course, the argument is made, well, there weren't any women present then, so he certainly didn't do that.
But didn't Jesus wash...
Are we sure?
Didn't Jesus wash the feet of prostitutes?
Well, he let a prostitute, or just Mary Magdalene, or one of the other Marys, depending upon, you know, who you listen to, mm-hmm. Wash his feet and perfume his feet.
Washed his feet.
Right.
Okay.
Right. But I would be just, hold on a second, fellas, when anybody starts to say that Jesus didn't have any female disciples and that there weren't any women present at thus or so, I don't know if we're really certain about that.
Yeah.
Jesus seemed to be all about welcoming people at the margins, and certainly in the first century, women were at the margins, and he had a lot of them who were around him and traveled with him, I would say. So maybe he did wash the feet of a woman.
And so,
I don't think it would be something he'd be against, that's for sure.
But they were all conveniently left out of the stories and the traditions?
Yeah.
Transcribed
by men.
Right.
When you say that Pope Francis washing the feet of women had a lot of meaning for a lot of people, what exactly do you mean? What meaning does that hold?
Well, I heard from a lot of women in particular, both Catholic and not, you know, Christian, and not, saying, wow, to see a pope humble himself in a very visceral way, washing someone's feet, that's pretty humbling. And to do that to a woman, a young woman, and a woman who happened to also be a Muslim, was just the humility and the posture, the literal posture of servanthood to women, just seemed to indicate that, first of all, women have value, that he does not put himself above women or anybody else, and that perhaps, I don't know, just perhaps, neither should his co-religionists, bishops and the priests.
And that's the perhaps, you know, because, I mean, the Catholic Church recently has been having the institutional Catholic Church has been having a pretty major crackdown on Catholic
the
nuns.
Women religious, the United States. You know, and I think I said, and forgive me, because I had my eye on evangelicals last week and not on Rome, but
oh,
I think something hit my radar. I know. The Romans have such better stage gear. really. I'm stealing that line from Bono, but that's what he says.
Oh, steal away. It's a great line.
but I believe he said something or released something basically affirming the crackdown, such as it was, with American women religious, with American nuns last year. But I think that might be more of a status quo for somebody who's only in the first, you know, 6 weeks, 2 months of his pontificate. I would be surprised if he didn't attempt to have a better relationship with the women in the United States.
But that's also the difference between that's sort of the situation you're in being able to look very closely at the church, is being able to read a lot into a very humble gesture that the Pope might make, like by washing the feet of a woman,
It's a humble gesture. It is a gesture, but given
it's also throwing stones at houses, right?
Right. But considering the timing of it, it was Holy Week. That is one of the most visible rituals that the Pope does in his ecclesiastical year, in the liturgical year, and to do it that way. And I also heard from people, media people, that he was not happy that there was media there, because he doesn't like to do those kinds of things in public. He doesn't want to show off. You know, but of course, understanding that he is in fact the Pope, and so you can't keep the media away. But he didn't seem to want to put that on display, which I appreciated as well. And that's something different. I don't think he's trying to spin anything in his favor. I just think he's being who he is. And from what I can tell from some of my Italian colleagues, not making a lot of friends among the Curia guys in Rome. Some of the Vatican old guard don't like these even small changes, because they realize that they're an indication probably of something larger.
Yeah, I actually read something that somebody said the inclusion of women in the right is problematic for some because it could be seen as an opening of sorts to women's ordination, which to me kind of sounds like the argument here in the United States that if we limit gun magazines to 10 rounds, that the next step is the government's going to take away everybody's guns. And
right, or if we legitimize same-sex marriage, then people are going to want to marry their cat.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right. But is that attitude common in the Catholic Church, that it's a slippery slope?
Well, it's seeing it. You know, there are folks who are more conservative and traditional who would see that as like, oh, God, the next thing we're going to have is women priests. And then there are people on the other side who would go, oh, great, the next thing we're going to have is women priests. I would be surprised by that. Perhaps in my lifetime we'll have women ordained, but we got to get to the letting priests, non-celibate folks, be ordained. I think that's the first stop on that particular trajectory.
Didn't I hear?
Non-celibate ladies before celibate
right?
men. Why?
Yeah.
You
got to get because there weren't any women at the Last Supper, you see, and Jesus didn't have any female disciples. I'm raising my hand so you can tell that I'm being totally sarcastic.
I think I remember reading once that I can't remember who I'm quoting, but the Vatican thinks in millennia, not years or
yes,
not centuries.
Yes, they do. That's it. They do. They think in centuries and millennia, not in days. And yeah, so they're not rushed.
But so it's only been 1,000 years we've been discussing the candidacy of women priests. So
yeah, well.
Right, and there's like a losing touch with reality more and more and more and more until you become something just bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, I think what we're seeing with the Catholic Church, we're also seeing on a larger scale that things within Christendom are changing quickly right now. We're in a growth spurt. So in terms of, social and cultural mores, things are changing very quickly, and this is, like warp speed for the Vatican to have a pope wash a woman's feet. Huh. I know from the outside it looks ridiculous, but over there it's like, whoa, slow down there, Speedy.
No, I know you were speaking before about covering evangelicals for the past week.
Yeah.
As you sort of look at different types of religion, where do you see the change sort of being the quickest? Where do you see the most advancement?
Well, right now, I think we're certainly in the evangelical Christian world in the United States, there's a significant learning curve that we're ascending at the moment in terms of environmentalism, social justice worldwide, and, sexuality, frankly. I mean, I'm just stunned at how quickly we're hearing some very public evangelical leaders of a certain generation backing way off of their staunch opposition to homosexuality and gay marriage.
Much sooner than we'll see the Catholic leaders do that, of course.
Yeah, but, even what I heard about the Pope is that he publicly in Argentina he opposed it, but behind the scenes he had a much more nuanced approach to homosexuality and to same-sex marriage.
Huh.
His words in public were, "This is a destructive proposal to God's plan." It's hard to imagine how he softened that behind the scenes.
It's softer in Spanish,
right? I know, from folks I've heard who know the inside story there, that was the public posture. And I mean, he said things, I believe, as extreme as gay adoptive parents is gay parents adopting children as child abuse, which I find that
patently offensive.
Perplexingly awful today.
Yeah, again, let's hope it sounded different in Spanish.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Maybe it sounded different inside his head than it came out, but behind the scenes, I'm told that he has much more nuance than perhaps some of his public pronouncements have indicated. But, so we're seeing lots of different people in the evangelical community of the generation older than us. So, folks are in their 60s and 70s who are sort of vanguards, changing their tune on same-sex marriage, because I think, to quote my friend Rob Bell, who's obviously somebody who's not of the older vanguard, but certainly of one of the more influential evangelicals of this generation, saying that that ship has sailed.
Yeah.
You kind of either have to get on board or be judged by history, and you don't want to wind up on the wrong side. And I think
that's a great topic for a whole nother show, whether conservatives want to be on the wrong side of history. So unfortunately,
back across the Tiber.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. So all the time we have for today. But thank you very much to Kathleen Falsani of the Orange County Register.
Welcome.
And always to the nun of the Church of How to Behave, Hannah Howard.
Ooh, no one ever called me a nun before.
No, they didn't. The How to Behave theme is courtesy of John Lundbaum and Big Five Chord.
Anytime.
Special thanks to John for being with us in the studio today.
Thanks for having me.
Check them out at bigfivechord.com. Thanks to Joe Galarraga for engineering today's show. You can always find episodes of How to Behave and lots of other great shows at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Brian Kaiser with a little advice for the Pope on how to behave when he's washing the feet of the unclean. Bend at the knees, not the back. This is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.